welcome to a special episode of PDGA Radio. Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen on this, the eve of the 2022 PDGA Professional Disc Golf World Championships from Emporia, Kansas. And we have got a treat for you just to get you in the mood for Worlds as if you aren't already. David Greenwell is a professional disc golfer who has played in every single Pro Worlds since the first one back in 1982. Now, you have to take the COVID year into account. We didn't play in 2020, but that means he has played in 40 Pro Worlds in a row. He's never missed one. And we got a chance to sit down with him for just a few minutes before he left on his travels to get here to Emporia. But before we get to David, we've got another special treat for you. Jennifer was able to catch up with the Mixed Pro Doubles Champions for 2022. The Mixed Pro Doubles event was played last Saturday, and she caught them right after they were crowned champions. Talking about Calvin Heinberg and Macy Valadez. You can hear all the hubbub going on behind them, the sounds of nature. That's just the way it is when you get a live interview with champions right there greenside. So this is Jennifer talking to the Mixed Pro Doubles champions.
Okay, we just wrapped up the World's Mixed Doubles, and we are here with the new world champions, Macy and Calvin. What do you think?
It's crazy. We played pretty well together. If we made a mistake, the other one bounced back, and we made some good putts, had some long drives, so I think we did pretty good.
Yeah, we played really consistent today. Kept away from bogeys for the most part, except for maybe one hole here in the second round. So, yeah, it was very clean. Definitely worked well together, and
You guys definitely had a good rhythm going. What do you think about us switching like MPO pads and baskets in the morning and then FPO? Was that fun?
Yeah, it's fun. It also gives you good practice and also just like lets you play the men's pads some in the baskets. I think that's really fun to do. So,
yeah, I think it was a pretty good change up, especially with the alternate shot, you know, making holes a little shorter because there's a lot more room for error. We don't get to take the best of two shots, so it was pretty fun. I kind of wish I had gone out and thrown some of them before the round. I'm sure everyone does because some of the holes I'd never seen before, but yeah, it was super fun to play this format.
And how great is it to start off the week with a world title? Is that change anything, get you a little more motivation to start? And Tuesday's coming up quick.
Yeah, it's given a lot of confidence. I feel pretty good about the course. My putting feels well, too. So I hope that just carries on throughout the tournament.
Two world titles this week, Calvin?
We're going to try. We'll see.
Okay, thank you, guys. Awesome week.
Yeah, thank you.
Had to leave that little chuckle in there from Calvin. One more time, congrats to Calvin Heinberg and Macy Valadez. And now, Jennifer and I welcome into the PDGA Radio virtual studio, David Greenwell.
It's been a busy day. I need to start packing.
Yeah, I need to finish packing, actually. I'm leaving Friday.
I haven't even started, and I leave tomorrow.
Okay.
And I have to pack for 2 months. How do you pack for 2 months?
2 months?
2 months.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. I've never done that before.
Never?
No, I don't think so. Not for two months.
Never stayed on the road for that long.
Well, I had to have a job, girl. I mean, it was a different world back when I was kind of one of the better players.
Me too. This is my first time. So
yep.
20 years later, and I finally can do this, I guess, full time.
This is 43 for me.
Woo.
Yeah.
I guess this is technically 23 for me. I started in 99.
Okay.
So 20 sounds better.
It does. At this point, I'm ready for 40 to be done.
Just be 50. You might as well just say I've been playing for 50 years.
Well, I'm talking about worlds.
Well, true, I guess. Yeah.
Well, if you guys think I'm going to cut out any of that gold that you guys just shared with the listeners, you're sorely mistaken. So we'll just update the listeners right now as to what's going on. It's Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen from PDGA Radio, along with David Greenwell. He's our guest today. And you heard him say just a moment ago, been playing disc golf professionally for 43 years. and relevant to this conversation, has also played in every single PDGA Professional World Championship since the very first one in 1982. So that makes this your 40th? Yes, David?
This is the 40th year, but it's like 45 or 6 worlds because I've played in two for since they split. And actually, I played in two in 1985 because they had one in Helsingborg as well as Tulsa. So I don't know if that was actually with Diff, but they called it the Pro Worlds.
Huh.
So, yeah. And then 17, 18, 19, 21, and now I've played in both the Open and the Senior Worlds.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that's where those additional ones come from. Well, I mean,
yeah. Once they split it, if you're going to say you played in all of them, then you got to play in all of them.
You got to count the other ones too. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Like I said, let's just say 50.
Let's just round it up. Right.
I hope I live that long to see the 50 part.
You will.
David, how has Worlds changed over those 40 years?
You know, besides the amount of people that are playing, the main word I can think of is predictable.
Huh.
Because in the beginning, discs were not predictable. Baskets were not predictable other than the fact that they were likely going to either go through the chains or hit the pole and come back out. So if you had the guys putting like they are today on the baskets that I started on, they would quit tomorrow afternoon because it was really hard to keep them from going through the chains unless you were lofting them in. So the predictable discs, the predictable catching devices is the biggest part, I guess, along with, oh yeah, the new guys don't have to go have a job besides playing disc golf. You know, that was,
it is a different world for sure with that part.
It really is.
I have to say though, since I have done both, and it probably would have been different back. It would have been different back in the day because we didn't play for a week long. You know, it was weekend tournaments, even really for a lot of the big ones. But touring full time versus working full time, I almost think touring is harder.
Okay, well, I never really got that chance, so I can't really say. But I'm thinking I would have spent a lot less time on the road, actually, if I didn't have to go to and from home in between events. So
Right.
You know more about that than me. I never got that chance.
It's exhausting, mentally, physically. It's definitely, I'm not even truly doing it full time. And I would have to say, work is easier and I have a pretty physical job. So I don't know. It's tough. It's tough out there. It's not just like all this glamour that people, I think, look at it as. So
right.
It's hard.
David, back in the earlier days, didn't they play often as many as 8 rounds at Pro Worlds?
I would say more than often, it was always.
Always at least 8 rounds.
Yeah, there was 8 or 10 rounds every time we played at Worlds. And there was most of the time there was 2 rounds a day until end of it. And then you played a semifinals and then a final 9.
That just sounds like such a grind. But I guess courses back then were maybe a little bit shorter and stuff. So maybe that helped a little.
Actually, they were pretty much shorter in the early days. And then they gradually started getting a bit longer. But still playing 2 rounds in the same day every single day was a load.
Wow.
When I started in 99, I think it's what I don't know when they switched, but it was like 2-1, 2-1, 2-1 alternating. So one day you had 2 rounds, the next day you had 1 round, you had afternoon off or whatever, and you alternated like that. But we definitely were still playing 2 rounds a day.
Well, and then the fact that you almost had to get there a week early to play because there was more courses.
Right.
You know, now they're playing 1 course once a day or 2 courses once a day, and it's a lot easier to be fresh. You know, and to know the course is good or better than anybody. So when you're trying to learn all of the courses better than anybody, it's at least an extra week.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you said the equipment has changed. The format clearly has changed somewhat. How have the players changed? How has the stage itself changed?
You know, I mean, youth. Back when I started playing, most of the people that were playing were at least in their 20s, and a lot of them in their 30s. And now kids are learning from their parents at a very early age and, oh, yeah, turning on their phone and looking at YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, you know, I mean, back in those early days, people didn't really want to teach you because they wanted to beat you. So, you know, I mean, it was like you had to scratch and claw to find out how to throw a roller shot. Oh, my God, a roller shot? Is that legal? Huh. So, yeah. And you didn't have very many people throwing sidearm because the discs were so deep and understable.
Right. Sure. That was almost considered a trick shot.
And it was. That's why Scott Stokely, who had really big hands, was one of the best sidearm throwers in the game. And it made a lot of difference.
Huh. Interesting. How about the like the fans, the galleries, have they, I know it's probably logical that they have increased on the whole, but I mean, even in the earlier days, would a pretty good crowd gather just to watch this phenomenon happening in their, you know, neighborhood park or whatever?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the gallery has always been a pretty appreciative one. And in those earlier days, it was more of a family atmosphere as opposed to the one that it is now, which is just big. So, yeah, I mean, the gallery was always cool and good, and it depended where you went. You know, I mean, we didn't ever play the Worlds in Japan, but in Japan, they had huge galleries because their parks were a whole lot different. They were a lot more organized and a lot more activities, and they let everybody know, you know, where things were going on. But yeah, the galleries have always been a fun, good part of it.
Were people trying to get videos even early on in some form or fashion?
You know, it was probably more pictures than it was videos at that point in time. I guess, you know, once some of the people like Disc Golf Planet TV, you know, they started doing some live broadcasting, and then a lot of other people seemed like they started doing shooting footage and then putting it together and then reproducing it later. With Disc Golf Planet, they tried to do it live, and that was really tough back in those days.
Oh, sure.
Very expensive.
Well, and even working with like VHS tapes and things like that back in those days. Yeah, remember those VHS tapes?
I'm sure I've got some laying around somewhere.
I mean, that can't have been easy.
You know, I actually have 3 or 4 tapes that were done, I guess it was around 2000, that I was trying to create a teaching video. And then a bunch of stuff happened, and I just kind of put them to the side. So I might break those out one day just to, for a novelty, but I've got several hours worth of footage from that.
Good luck finding something to actually play them on that still works.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to take them to like Costco or something and have them redone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's true. This might overlap some, Jennifer, with some of your early days. David, do you have any world championships, and I'm sure you can tell a story about, or more than one story about, virtually every year, but are there any in particular that sort of stand out to you in terms of there being a unique occurrence at that Worlds, or just a fun story that a lot of people don't know, or maybe it's the story of you and your one of your best performances or something like that? Are there any Worlds that stand out to you?
You know, I mean, when you're in the heat of the competition, you're mainly focused on yourself and what you're doing. And I mean, that sounds a little egomaniac, but that's the memories that are the freshest. And there were several different events where I was kind of in the hunt, and just something happened, you know, that kept you from, you know, doing what you want to do. Either you got put in a wrong group, or there's just any number of different things. It's hard to focus on one or two of them. But yeah, staying anywhere near Ken Klimo when he started playing was a pretty happy occasion. And, you know, back in the earlier days, the doubles events were actually considered world titles. And it was probably the most fun because there was less pressure and it's the truest form of going for it, you know, when you're playing doubles. So I had some nice runs with those with Mike Sullivan. He and I came in, won three in a row back in the late 80s. The first one we won, there was a three-way tie in Charlotte. And none of the other teams that we tied with wanted to play it off. And it's like, wait a minute. We want to say that we won. So that ended up in a three-way tie, and we won the next two. And then Ken Klimo and his partner, when he came in, ended our streak of three in a row. So that was something that I'll remember for a while. A couple of years later, he and his partner, C.R. Willie, had won two in a row. And I partnered up with Steve Weisskopf and ended their streak in 1991. Huh. So that was another fun one. Anytime you beat Kenny in anything, it was a big deal because he was one of the most competitive people I've ever been around.
Why do you think doubles was bigger than it is now?
You know, I'm not really sure. I guess a lot more people played doubles in the earlier days. And since everybody was together, it just seemed bigger, you know? I mean, there was more open players in those early days and less people that were playing Masters and Grandmasters. And then all of a sudden, seemed like everybody wanted to win some kind of world title, no matter which division that it was in. And I get that, you know? I mean, I felt the same way and toward the end of it. But in those early days, the Masters division started at 35 and was that way for several years, and then they changed it to 40, which I think it should have been from the get-go, but can't go back and change history.
I had a lot of fun playing with Sarah. That was my first doubles world competition, so one for one, and I will be playing my first mixed doubles with Drew Gibson here in less than a week, a few days.
Saturday?
Yes. That sounds like a formidable team.
I know,
team.
I'm pretty excited. So, but with Sarah, yeah. it is, like you said, it's just different and it's a lot of fun and you can go for everything. Yet the pressure when it's alternate shot is huge. You know, you don't want to let down your partner. And so doubles is, it's a fun event. And I'm excited to play in both of those this year.
Yeah, try playing doubles with Ken Klimo. His expectations weren't very big. You know, I mean, I didn't get to play Worlds with him, but I played in the U.S. Doubles Championship with him where you had many different formats. But, doubles was great. And probably one of the biggest wins I ever had in my life was in 2002 when they were in Houston, and I played doubles with Mike Young. And there was a couple rookies that were ranked first and second in the world named Ken Klimo and Barry Schultz, who were playing doubles together for the first time. And we beat them. And I was 49 years old at the time. So, I mean, I was not a spring chicken by any stretch, but that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Mike was a great golfer.
Oh yeah. So yeah, doubles was a blast. And again, there was a lot of really good teams back then, you know, a lot of the European teams and just, yeah, a lot of good players.
There is a lot of great teams this year. Right? I don't know if you've looked at the doubles list, but I am super excited because there are a lot of very tough teams. So it should still be a world title. It's going to be a blast no matter what. And I'm definitely excited.
Yeah, and it should be. I mean, anytime you have the best players in the world in the same place playing in the same tournament, you know, the side events should be considered world titles as well. I can't imagine why they wouldn't be.
Taking into account, I mean, we've been talking about other things like the doubles competition and taking into account the host city itself and the nature of the courses and just all of those things. What were some of the best worlds in your memory, just taking into account the venue and all of that? Are there a couple of cities or a couple of locales that for whatever reason stand out to you as, wow, that was a really cool place to have a championship?
Wow. There have been so many. Iowa was a really good Worlds. The first time that they had it in Iowa, I remember the courses being really, really good. Golly, just so many. I mean, Arizona, Flagstaff was really cool. When they had it in Northern California, that was amazing. And Charlotte is always full of good courses. There's just a bunch of good courses there. So yeah, Huntsville, you know, I mean, I could go on and on because I just liked every world, right. You know, I mean, then.
Do you like the courses mainly the most, or do you like a great city that there's other things to do while you're in town? Because we're there for quite a while.
You know, I mean, I'm going there to play disc golf. I can go on vacation anywhere I want, anytime, and have no pressure. And that's great. And of course, you appreciate your surroundings when you're at the event. But the reason I go to Worlds was to compete.
You know,
I mean,
to win.
Going to these open worlds these days feels really odd to me because I know that when I'm going there, I have no chance of winning and very little chance of cashing. And, you know, I'm just hoping to play the courses as good as I can and finish. Because they're so big. And I don't know if you all know anything about getting over 65, but let me tell you, they didn't write a rule book for that. They didn't tell me anything about it. I mean, you hear stories, but until you actually do it, it's like, oh, yeah, I used to be able to throw that far. But but yeah, you know, it's a different world, and you appreciate the people around you, and you appreciate the skill level that you're watching. So it's just kind of morphing into something else these days for me on that side of it.
I think that's why I kind of asked, like, do you enjoy some of these good, like, big cities now that you get a little bit of both? Because we only play one round a day now, there is a lot more downtime than there ever was in the previous world. So I think it is fun now that a couple of these bigger cities host something where they're, you know, like Oregon, you can go see the waterfalls, or in California, you go to the beach or wherever. So I didn't know now that it's not all about just winning for you if you enjoy some of these nicer cities.
You know what? I do. And I'm glad you brought up Oregon because that was a great world as well. I really enjoyed being there. But in these open tournaments, I'm usually kind of laying down on the bed stretching. I get through with that one round. So, you know, I hope to get out in the evening and share some time.
Maybe
with
a nice
people.
Dinner. Yeah.
But yeah, these are big courses, and you got to throw hard almost every time until you get near the basket. So
yes, that is
right. Sure.
Grant and I were talking on our previous show about hopefully this time we won't have the wind that we experienced earlier this year when we played them at DDO. I don't know if you saw any of that coverage, but the winds when we played these courses last time was unreal. So hopefully this time will be a little easier for us.
Yeah, I mean, I did see some of that, and that's pretty brutal. I mean, it kind of reminded me of the Worlds at Smuggler's Notch a few years ago when it started raining right when the round started, and it blew my umbrella inside out. So you had the wind and the rain at the same time. And I struggled through a round and thought I was, you know, kind of keeping the bleeding from getting too excessive. And I ended up with like an 8-stroke lead. So that was in the Masters or the Grandmaster, whatever you want to call it. It was 60 and over. But yeah, that's pretty brutal when you have to focus that much on every shot and which direction you're walking and how you got your raincoat on and the whole nine yards.
Do you remember, speaking of storms, and this is just fresh in my mind because Brian Henniger just told me about it, the storm that hit in the middle of the round in Flagstaff on the mountain course where the temperature apparently dropped into the 40s and it hailed and the players were stuck on the mountain. And
I remember Jennifer, that just like a few years ago, because it happened again. Like, I don't, it must be a thing in Flagstaff. That's happened to me when we played snowball, like out of nowhere started raining and then hailing. And it was that mountain's hard to play on.
You know, when that was going on, I was actually at the bottom. I was on another course, so I didn't really get to experience that part of it.
Oh, really?
But I heard that there was tempers flaring because of all of the inconvenience of the weather.
There's no place to hide either. Like, you're just exposed out there. Yeah.
Well, apparently, according to Brian, it was one of the first times at a world championship where the weather caused that much trouble in terms of like suspending play and players having to leave the course and being at a different point in their round and then coming back. And then, you know, some players are done. Some players still have a lot of, you know, holes to go. And how do you do that fairly? And it was just a big, interesting, almost like moment of growth for the sport, you know, when the biggest stage had that kind of stuff happen and everybody watched to see how it was handled. So maybe that's a reason why somebody like Brian Henniger remembers that so well, because he was I believe he was the executive director during that time. So interesting.
Yeah, there was a kind of a situation like that in Cincinnati. I think it was in 88 where several different groups finished in the dark.
Oh, wow.
And so we actually had somebody with a car and headlights shining down the fairway so we could finish. And they actually let several groups play their holes over if they wanted, and then some didn't if they didn't want to. And there was a lot of scores that changed weirdly. So I know, seriously, Johnny Sias was one of those who didn't get to play it over. And he actually stayed out for some years because of that. It was,
wow.
So yeah, you know, there's stuff that happens, and I don't know, Mother Nature is beautiful and cool and cruel. So, you know, I mean, it was a tough finish for sure.
What are your expectations for this week, David, heading to Emporia, here in just a couple of days? What do you expect to see? How do you expect to play? What is it that you want to get out of this in terms of memories? All of that.
You know, the first things first, I got to get there.
Right.
since I mean, I'm not trying to play the pity thing here, but since I lost sight in my right eye, driving is a lot harder than it used to be. And if it's raining, I have to pull off the side of the road. I mean, if it gets dark, I kind of have to pull off. So that used to never be a thing, and now it is somewhat. So getting there is first on the agenda. Then I'll probably walk the course on Saturday so I can at least see where I don't want to throw. And I'm just hoping to finish. You know, this will complete 40 years of Worlds. And 40 has been a kind of significant number in a bunch of different ways in my life. And filling out the full 40 before, because I mean, this is likely going to be my last year attempting to play in the Open, you know, because I mean, I don't want to take somebody's spot that could likely have a chance. And I don't feel like I'm doing that now, because I saw several people whose player ratings are better than mine, but they're not that good that they're going to win. And so, yeah, I mean, you do the best you can with what you got, but then you watch at a certain point, and I've never really been ready to watch, but I'm getting close. So finishing 40 is a big deal. You know, it's a good number to end on. And it's the year that I won my first singles title in the Masters division. I'd won several doubles titles, but my first singles title was in Huntsville in 93.
I think no matter what, you should consider this a win.
Well,
getting, like you said, getting there, playing, competing, that's, it's phenomenal. And we all look up to you for that. So from all of us, please consider that a win.
Okay. Well, thanks. yeah. I mean, it's been 40 years, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen that could have kept me out of the worlds, you know, and a lot of things that I kind of juggled and jiggled and finagled and however you want to put it to be able to continue yeah. that streak. And it's, you know, all good things come to an end, and this one is probably going to end this year as far as that goes. Whether I play in more senior division worlds, I'm not 100% sure yet, because once you lose sight in one eye, your depth perception is so far off that it almost feels embarrassing mm-hmm. trying to putt. And that has been a pretty good part of my game for a long time. I mean, you know, skill shot stuff, you know, with all the rollers and upside down and trick shots has been part of it, but getting it in the basket is the bottom line. And I've done that pretty good most of my career. And now it's so much harder to do that I don't think I've got enough time to spend on it to get to where I would want to be, really.
Well, David, we can't wait to see you next week, first of all, because obviously Jennifer will be there competing. I'll be there doing all kinds of different work. So we can't wait to see you here in the coming days. And we're going to be living vicariously through you, not just this week, but just because I think we all want a story like yours one day. So thanks for coming on and just sharing a little bit with us. Congratulations on this incredible streak. And I hope that if anything, you just get to build a lot more memories this week.
You know, that is a really big deal. And, you know, I mean, this has been something that I'm so elated that it is where it is, because if it would have been the hula hoop and I spent 43 years of my life doing that for the hula hoop, I'd have been pretty disappointed about what I did with my life. But I think it's in good hands, and I think it's going to do nothing but move forward. And I'm really excited to watch all these young superstars play. I mean, I would have loved to have had these kind of discs when I was a teenager. Well, I didn't even know what disc golf was till I was 25. So, you know, I mean, having a young arm with these kind of tools, that's pretty special. And I just am appreciative of the art.
Thank you, David. Best of luck this week.
See you soon.
Well, thank you all so much, and keep up the good work.
Best of luck to David, a living legend in the world of disc golf. And best of luck to all the competitors this week at 2022 PDGA Pro Worlds. Until Tuesday morning, when Worlds kicks off, PDGA Radio, see ya!